Hello, you're listening to the C to Z of Movies. My name is Colin. I am the C. Joining me is the C and the Z. Hello, Z.
Hey, Colin. You know that I've been doing your crossword puzzle with Matthew Perry in it.
Yes. I'm a crossword writer occasionally, and I now occasionally write crosswords for the Actuary magazine. How did you get on with the crossword, Z?
Horribly. No, as in, like, I definitely didn't solve it the right way. I solved it by looking at your answers and trying to back solve from there. So some of them I got quite easily, like Euclid, which was quite good.
Nice.
I like that you put quite a lot of actuarial stuff in it as well.
Yeah, a few mathematical references. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's nice. But yeah, I was quite sad I didn't get the Matthew Perry, Neve Campbell link to the title of your quiz either.
So the crossword is called Three to Tango, which for a long time was my favorite movie. Yes, Neve Campbell and Matthew Perry both appear in the answers. If for some reason they've published the answers right next to the crossword, which does make it a bit easier.
It is right next to the crossword.
Yeah. Also, for some reason, they published the down clues before the across clues. I don't know.
Yeah, they do as well. Why?
I'm not responsible for the editorial. Is this your first cryptic crossword, Zijan?
Well, I mean, I've tried some clues with you before. But I don't do well with them. It's a skill that about identifying words that give clues to, you know, whether it's an anagram or whether it's initials, backwards or reverse, and I still don't get it yet. Like, I get the obvious ones, but I cannot get the ones which are like, oh, this means this, but not really.
some of them take a bit of getting used to.
Yeah.
Well, that's I'm glad that you've set off on this journey, and every couple of months I should have one in there. So, for any of the listeners who receive the Actuary magazine,
no one does.
So it's me, or I can't remember the name now. There's someone else who sets them under a different name. But we're not here to talk about crossroads, Ijan. We're here to talk about Dumb Money.
Yes, we are.
We're also talking about the films of Susan Sarandon, or maybe Sarandon. I'm never quite sure. We've got a quiz on the films of Paul Thomas Anderson, or maybe Anderson. No, it's definitely Anderson.
No.
And much more. Except it's not a lot more. Shall we start? Do we want to kind of tell people what we're doing with our final ever podcast episode?
Let's do that. So this is podcast 193. And I think we mentioned a few podcasts ago that podcast 200 is going to be our final podcast.
I've just discovered my numbering system is wrong in my Word document. Yes, it is 193.
We've invited a lot of our old guests to come onto this podcast and give us a quiz on film.
Yeah. So, and in fact, a few new faces as well, or new voices, I should say. So some people who've not been on before. People will know that we always do a quiz at the end of the episode, and we quiz each other. But as Susan says, we'll be getting people to quiz us. I'm a little peek behind the curtain. We've already recorded part of that. I'm looking forward to doing this over these next few months coming up to our final episode.
I think it'll be good. I think it'll be fun. And it's a good way to wrap up our podcast, right?
Yeah. It's also nice to be quizzed on something we don't have to revise for.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true.
But we'll start this episode, as we always start our episodes, with movie news. Susan, what have you got?
Well, not much. I begin with every podcast now, apparently, with news about the strike. And yes. This time around, I think the strike may look like it's ending sometime soon.
Well, depends which strike you're talking about.
That is true. Because I think there was a deal that was being struck between the Writers Guild of America. And I think, something is expected to be locked in this week. So
yeah, it sounds that way.
Hopefully this means we have got more news next time round.
Yeah, hopefully. So, it sounds, I've not read the detail, but it sounds like they've got a lot of what they asked for in terms of staffing levels and AI and what have you. Oh. So, the writer's strike hopefully over before too long. In fact, maybe some people are already treating it as if it is over, I think. But I don't think that's quite official. The actor's strike is still happening.
Okay.
Hopefully light at the end of the tunnel.
I do miss watching interviews, though, I have to be honest. I didn't realize how many interviews I do watch on YouTube, etc. And I do miss having that about. In general. Not just in movies, in TV as well. I do miss that. So, yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah, you still occasionally see, like, the Umbrella Academy put out a video the other day, and it's like, it was only kind of, it wasn't even an interview or anything. It was just Ferris Bueller kind of celebrating an anniversary. I think we'll just see the next series is coming. But obviously, it was all filmed ages ago before they were on strike. So they have to put a little thing saying, filmed previously. Loki just began and got various things with Tom Hiddleston. They've all got to say, he filmed this a while ago. He's not a scab.
I'm not sure I'm keen to watch it until the reviews come out because I'm just burnt out with Marvel at the moment. So, yeah.
Okay. I've seen episode one. But we're not a TV series for us. I enjoyed it. It was good times. Taylor Swift, not content with having maybe the biggest grossing tour of all time, has decided to put it into cinemas. And it's coming out, I think, in October. It already has advanced ticket sales of over $100 million, which, frankly, is insane.
It's incredible, right? Like, and I think people, I mean, all the cinemas are fully booked out. I think people want to get tickets, just like their concerts, her concerts, they can't get them. So she could make a lot more money if she wanted to.
I mean, the most money that a concert film has ever made, like in total, is I think $89 million with Justin Timberlake. So even before this has come out, it's topped that. I think it's beaten lots of advanced ticket sales records. The first day sales were $26 million. The previous record was 16.9 for Spider-Man No Way Home. So it smashed that record as well.
That's incredible.
It's an amazing for a concert film. I mean,
it's not going to be the same, is it? I'm quite happy that you managed to procure the tickets, Colin, and I'm happy to be one of your invited guests to see Taylor Swift live. Because
I don't think we've mentioned this on the podcast before, that Zijan and I will be there in person. No cinema screens for us. We'll be there at Wembley. Yes, well, you're right. It was me, but the tour was sort of a two-pronged attack to make sure we got hold of some. Yeah.
Well, it's so ridiculous, though. Like, the whole ticketing system, I think it needs a revamp. I just don't... I'm very thankful that I got a ticket in the end, but I can imagine many people being disappointed to be left out from it all. And watching a theater, watching a musical, a film musical in the cinema, it's not the same as watching it live, you know?
No.
Watching a concert live, it's just not the same. You need the atmosphere. You need...
Because she's done it before. She's done concert movies, I think, still on Disney Plus. She's done one on Netflix. So I've seen them, and they're fine. I imagine for a cinema release, they're going to up the ante a little bit and make it a bit more special. But yeah, I don't think I'll be bothered to go to the cinema to see something that I'm going to see in person later.
Me either. Although I did see Elton John's last performance in Glastonbury, and that was quite good, though.
Oh, nice.
No, not live. On the BBC. That's it.
Because I think Elton John holds the record for the highest grossing tour with his last tour, which I saw at Aston Gate.
I'm quite sad I missed that, I have to say.
It was pretty good. It's pretty good.
My next bit of news is that Chris Rock is directing a Martin Luther King Jr. biopic.
Yeah, a bit of a surprise.
Which is going to be produced by Steven Spielberg. I don't know whether he's starring in it, but he's definitely directing it. I think, is this his directorial debut? Probably.
Apparently not. I wasn't aware of anything, but he's directed a few things, but pretty much all comedies and nothing since 2014. So it's a bit of a change of pace for him.
Wow. So this is based on a biography, King Alive, by Jonathan Eich. And this is going to be produced by Universal.
Interesting question about whether Chris... I don't think Chris Rock will play the part. That would surprise me, but you never know. You never know. There isn't really a definitive Martin Luther King biopic, is there?
Yeah, no.
Maybe this will be it. I'm sure he's been... I'm trying to think now. I'm sure he has been played by people in film before, but I can't think of one right now, but I'm sure it must have happened. Hmm. But yes, there was Selma, wasn't there?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was intriguing. The only other piece of news I've got is kind of movie news. I'm very excited. 13 Going on 30 is becoming a musical film. Not a musical film, a musical. And I'm a little bit jealous of people who live in London, Zijan.
That's me?
That's you, because it's coming to London. But not only that, but you can, on the 25th to 28th of October, i.e. later this month, you can see a kind of a preview thing of it at Battersea Arts Centre.
Ooh!
And I've checked my diary, and sadly, I'm going to be in Yorkshire at the time. So I
won't,
I'm
not... that's such a shame.
Same, but when it hits the West End, I definitely will be there for that.
We can go to that.
Awesome. See you there.
Mean Girls, the musical, is coming out next year, apparently.
Oh, yes, because there is a question that is this going to make that route of movie to musical to movie, which is very possible. We both loved Groundhog Day musical. I'm really hoping that comes a movie. I think it's very unlikely, but you never know. I think, in fact, the music for this one is being done by the writers behind High School Musical, the movie, the series, the musical, the series, or something.
Yep, I know that one.
Yeah, so we'll see. But yeah, I think 13 Going on 30, I love that film. It has, it's got a, is it a cult classic, maybe? I don't think it was a huge smash, but it's much loved by a lot of people. So.
I mean, I think it could work. It just depends on, it's good songwriting. Like, I mean, movies being turned into musicals, a dime a dozen nowadays. I mean, Pretty Woman is right now. Mrs. Doubtfire is out right now in London. And I mean, they tend to have middling to good reviews. They are two different mediums. There's quite a skill to be able to transform it into a proper musical. Just like Groundhog Day, I mean, they didn't do it word for word, but they captured the essence of it really well.
Yeah. And still made it its own thing. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if they can afford, I'm assuming they won't put in Thriller, but the Thriller dance scene in 13 Going on 30 is one of the more memorable bits, but I'm assuming they won't be able to do that, because that's less than their entire budget. But the same writers involved in the original film will be involved in this, apparently. The director has passed away, sadly, so he won't be involved, but at least it's not that pedigree.
Okay, that sounds good, though. The rest of my news, I've been scoured, the very, very... edges of the internet for these, and do they even come as movie news? Basically, I've looked at other websites compared other than Empire. Basically, that's what I did.
What? So, usually it's me who brings out the dregs at the end of the news section. I'm excited for this.
I know. So apparently, Christopher Nolan wants to make James Bond films in a period setting.
Oh yeah, okay.
Yep. According to sources at World of Real. these are legit sources, Colin.
Is this real with double E?
Yes, R-E-E-L.
Sure, all right.
He is in talks with Bond producer Barbara to direct the next two or three films in the franchise.
Did you just give her the first name only, though?
No, only because... I wrote her last name as Broccoli. Is her name Barbara Broccoli?
Her name is Barbara Broccoli,
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, there you go.
So
it must be true.
Yeah, I mean, it must be true because they got her name right. I mean, Christian Nolan, I think, has talked before about wanting to do Bond, although it was largely believed that when he did Tenet, that was kind of his way of doing Bond, kind of doing a spy thing. But people have talked about pushing it back to the 60s, the kind of the heyday of James Bond.
Yeah.
Which I think would work.
So, I mean, it was then when it was written as well, right? So,
yeah. Well, let's see if World of Real has got it right.
World of Real. And my last bit of news, which comes as no surprise. Yeah, I know, right? But it's no surprise anyway. And I could make a conjecture from the strikes because community creator Dan Harmon has given fans a disappointing update on the upcoming movie, suggesting that the strikes have put things on hold again.
Okay. So, it's not cancelled, it's just delayed, is it?
Yeah, delayed indefinitely. Okay. Just like pretty much everything else in Hollywood right now, really.
Yeah, it always felt like it might get delayed, even without the strike. Okay, well, we'll live in hope.
It will eventually come.
One day. We move on then to our next segment, To See or Not to Zed, where we talk about the films that we've seen and tell you, the listener, whether you should see them or not Zed them. Zijan.
Yes.
What have you been seeing?
I saw The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar.
Ah, okay.
Yes. The Wes Anderson written, co-produced and directed film on Netflix right now, based on the 1977 short story of the same name by Roald Dahl. We spoke about this in the last podcast, I think. You mentioned it. And I thought, why not? Let's watch it. It's 40 minutes long, which is any film that is 40 minutes long is great, man.
barely a movie, let's be honest.
It is a movie.
I mean, it is a movie, but if you 40 minutes. I don't know, what's the film equivalent of a novella?
Well, this one apparently. It stars Benedict Cumberbatch as the title character, alongside Ralph Fiennes, Dev Patel, Ben Kingsley, and Richard Ayoade.
Yes, I've not got around to this yet, so no spoilers.
So the story is about a rich man learning about a guru who could see without using his eyes, then setting out to master the skill in order to cheat at gambling. So I think, in general, Wes Anderson and Roald Dahl are just a general good mix, really. I mean, they're both quirky, but there's always like sinister undertones, dark undertones in whatever they produce. Whatever Wes Anderson do and whatever Roald Dahl writes, there's always that in that. So I think they are basically a match made in heaven when it comes to making films out of books, really. And I think this is no exception.
Yeah, he'd already done Fantastic Mr. Fox, and he was.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So this is his second one. And there were like three short films as well alongside this. Even shorter ones, Colin. 20 minutes long. So they're not really a film. Like,
that's not a film. That's barely an episode.
That's an episode of TV.
Wow.
So, but yeah, I think it works here. I mean, it helps that they have such a wonderful cast, honestly. But the directing is very Wes Anderson, and it works really well. The writing is superb, and I think you should check it out. It's 40 minutes long. What could you lose?
I'll get to it. I've also been watching a new film on Netflix. This one is 91 minutes long, so it's still quite brisk. It's Love at First Sight.
I saw this. They were recommending this to me on Netflix. Yeah,
there you go. It's a romantic comedy, as you might expect from the title, but unlike most Netflix romantic comedies, it actually got a cast I've heard of. Although the leads, Hayley Lou Richardson is the female lead. She was Hayley Steinfeld's best friend in Edge of 17, which is the only thing I've seen her before. And the lead actor is Ben Hardy, who I didn't know, but supporting cast, Rob Delaney, Jamila Jamil, Dexter Fletcher, Sally Phillips, all people I've come across. So that boded well. And it's based on a novel, which I've never heard of, called The Statistical Probability of Love at First Sight. They meet on a plane. I won't spoil the story, but it follows fairly standard rom-com beats, but it's got a bit more to it than that. I think it's got a bit more depth than you average rom-com. I really like this. I think it's done really well. There's good chemistry between the leads. There's good performances all around. I would say that Ben Hardy is not realistic as a self-proclaimed maths geek. I know a lot of maths geeks. CJ and I am a maths geek. And we don't
yes,
know
you
about
are.
That. His favorite number is pi. One thing that frustrates me
about... His favorite number is pi.
No, sorry, it's not. That's my favorite number. His favorite number is I, the square root of minus one.
Okay.
Which is pretty cool. Well, not cool, but you know. Yeah, I think this is well worth a watch. If you enjoy romantic comedies, it's fun. It's not going to revolutionize the format, but it's a very good version of the format, I think. Oh. I have one complaint, Zijan. It's a complaint I forgot to make about North Star last time, but it's exactly the same complaint in both of these, is that both of them involve church weddings in the United Kingdom, or I should say, in fact, in England, church weddings in England, where bride and groom say, I do. And in the church wedding service in England, we don't say, I do. We say, I will. And that annoyed me a lot. Why does no one do their research? Okay, in a registry wedding over here, in an American wedding, they say, I do. But we say, I will.
I think you should write a stern letter to Netflix.
I will write a stern letter to Netflix. And I'm hoping that they'll re-edit this.
Yes. Just like my stern letter to the directors of Venom.
Have they released a version of Venom where they flipped the picture in...
No, of course not.
Oh, disappointing. Well, I'll keep you updated, Zijan, on how my letter writing campaign has gone.
Okay, good. We want complete accuracy in every film that they make.
Yes. So aside from that annoying thing, this one's worth a watch as well. So there you go. I think last time we had... like four films that we all said they weren't that great. So it's nice to have two films that we are recommending here.
Yeah.
We move on to another new film, this time in cinemas. It might already be heading out to cinemas. So
yes, it probably is, because The Exorcist is coming out. It has come out today, I think.
Okay.
People are craving to watch The Exorcist and Saw X, apparently.
Oh, man. So the film has done money. We'll talk about that at length in a second. But the first trailer for this film when I came in was for Saw X. And I had my eyes closed throughout that trailer. But even then, it almost gave me nightmares just from the sound of it. Goodness me.
I thought they made it such that only horror trailers will be played before horror films. I mean, exactly. It makes sense, right? Yeah, I don't understand why they put it that. It was in mind as well. So I definitely had The Exorcist in mind. So the new Exorcist was before mine.
It was back-to-back horror movie trailers. And I was sitting there thinking, like, have I accidentally walked into the wrong screen here?
They'll be right awkward. What
and I don't care if I'm a 37-year-old man hiding his eyes and these kids around me are loving it. Anyway, Dumb Money. Tijan, tell us about Dumb Money.
Yeah, so this is a 20 American biographical comedy drama film. Oh my goodness, there must be a better way of putting this.
that's a lot of stuff, isn't it?
It really is. It's basically everything in not horror, but action. Yeah. Biological comedy drama film. Just shorten it somehow.
Do you say biological?
Biocom drama ish.
Biocom drama. Yeah, all right.
Yeah. It's directed by Craig Gillespie of I, Tonya and Cruella fame. It's based on the 2021 book The Antisocial Network by Ben Metzrick, which chronicles the GameStop short squeeze of January 2021, which I was very well aware of. And I think you are very well aware of as well, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was aware of it. I wouldn't say very well, but I saw it come up on Twitter, like people chatting about it.
Do you know Reddit, Colin? Have you been on Reddit?
I am aware of Reddit, but no, I don't go on Reddit.
Okay, so Reddit, I love Reddit. It's my favorite place to hang out in. Let me give you a background on Reddit. So Reddit right now is it's an online forum where there are different subs where you can sub on, where people discuss lots of things. Like, for example, Wheel of Time, Colin, where people discuss whether the latest TV series matches up with the book. And it's very fun to be part of the ongoing discussions of these kind of things.
I feel like I haven't got time, Tijan.
You don't even work on Mondays.
I didn't go down 4 days so I could spend a day on Reddit a week.
Anyway, so the background of this story is that there was this Reddit sub called Wall Street Bets, and the sub is still going on right now. I don't know why I use the past tense. There is a Reddit sub called Wall Street Bets, and this is where individual investors like you and moi, myself, basically discuss what stocks are worth buying, etc. So no one pays very much attention to this.
Have you been on Wall Street, Wall Street Bets?
I have not been on Wall Street Bets, but they sometimes pop out onto my recommended list. People show how well the stocks have been performing. People show how poorly their stocks has been performing, etc., etc. So just to give you a gist of this, what happened in 2021 was that the Wall Street Bets forum, the people there came together to buy GameStop shares, essentially. So GameStop is, I think it's a company based in America, right, if I'm not mistaken, which sells gadgets. Well, from the film itself,
games, I think, and computer accessories and what have you.
Games, computer accessories, etc. So essentially, the big hedge funds were thinking that the stock prices were going to fall, so they started shorting the shares. And these individual investors, with the help of Wall Street Bets on Reddit, purchased lots and lots of shares instead and squeezed the hedge fund investors. So it's a story about the little man trying to overthrow the big guy. I think I spoke too much about this,
I mean, I think people knew that going in. David and Goliath story. We are both actuaries, so we have some financial understanding, you would hope. This film does its best, I think, to explain what shorting mean.
Does it? No, I don't think it does. It works as well as like The Big Short. I don't think they explain it as well as The Big Short did.
Weirdly, I was flicking through the University of Toronto student newspaper whilst I was on holiday, and there's a review of this movie. And the student who was reviewing it said, I don't do finance, but this film explained to me what shorting was. And then they tried to explain what it was, and they got it completely wrong. So I was like, well, it didn't explain it that well then, did it? But by and large, I mean, I think everyone's on board with the idea that it means that the Wall Street guys are trying to make the share price go down.
Yes.
The mechanics of how that helps them and buying put options and things perhaps is not something we need to delve too deeply into in the film, certainly doesn't. But it's very much the Wall Street guys wanted to go down, the other guys want to go up. That's kind of what we need to know. As you say, Craig Gillespie, I absolutely love I, Tonya. I think that's a fantastic film.
Cruella is great as well.
I enjoy Cruella a lot. Yeah. So he's got a good track record. The guy, Ben Mezrich, who wrote the book, The Antisocial Network, it's a bit of a play on terms because he also wrote the film, wrote the book, The Accidental Billionaires, which is what The Social Network is based on, which is another fantastic movie. So this has a kind of a good pedigree, great cast going into it as well. Should we go through some of the cast?
Yeah, let's do that.
We've got Paul Dano, is Heath Gill, the investor you mentioned, who he live streams, but can you live stream on Reddit? I thought it was just a text thing.
Yeah, it's basically text on Reddit, but I think he live streams on the site as well, and he puts the YouTube channels. You could link YouTube channels on Reddit, basically. So
I'm so old. Yes.
Paul
Dano. Again, I think it's a fantastic actor, one of the best actors of his generation. I wouldn't say this is his most personable performance. I think it's a. I don't know. Have you ever seen Keith Gill in other than the kind of the
No,
closing credits
I actually wanted to Google him before I did this podcast, but I forgot about it. I wrote here, Paul Dano is the master of playing the mild-mannered guy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I mean, I think when he played Steven Spielberg's father as well.
Yes, was
the same temperament, I would say.
Yeah, he tends to be a... I mean, sometimes he'll crack, like Ruby Sparks, he's kind of my mind guy who then does crack at one point. And obviously, maybe best known for a Paul Thomas Anderson film that I won't reveal in case it ruins our quiz.
Yes.
Yeah. And he's my man, but verging on dull, but I don't know whether Keith Gill, maybe that's a brilliant performance and he's spot on Keith Gill. I don't know. But it felt like he needed the supporting cast to make the film interesting, to help him out. Pete Davidson plays his brother. Now, Pete Davidson does not play Dull. Pete Davidson never plays Dull.
Right. Subtlety is not his forte.
No, he's a good actor, Pete Davidson. He crops up more than you think in things. And he puts in some lovely performances. I think he's fine here. Does kind of plays what you'd expect Pete Davidson to play.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of irresponsible.
I mean, he's the foil to him, right? He's the foil to Paul Dano's character. So,
yeah,
he's something like that. Yeah,
can't hold down a job, takes drugs, etc. Mm. I'm doing these in the order on Wikipedia. It's a slightly odd order, but here we go. Vincent D'Onofrio is
one of the hedge fund managers, I believe.
Yes, one of the hedge fund guys. Yeah, yeah. Mm. I like Vinny D'Onofrio.
I like Vinny D'Onofrio as well. I find like watching this film, like watching The Big Short, like, hey, I know him. Hey, I know him. Oh, exactly. I didn't know he was here. Oh, look, all these cameos here. Oh, wow, I know everyone here. Oh, they got quite a good cast of people here.
Such a good cast. I as you know, on Facebook, I put pictures of all the movies I've got on DVD. And I've got a movie, I can't remember what it's called now. The Accidents or something. But it stars Vincent D'Onofrio and Marissa Tomei. And it was probably from the mid-90s, early 90s. So much younger. And someone asked me if it was a picture of my parents. I thought that's the most congratulatory thing I've ever heard about my parents. That, a young Vincent D'Onofrio and Marissa Tomei.
You look like a young D'Onofrio and Marissa Tomei. Wow.
I think that's what they're saying, is that I look like someone whose parents would be Vincent D'Onofrio and Marissa Tomei. I'll take the compliment. America Ferreira is there. She's a... she's a single mother. She's a mother who is a fan of the YouTube channel.
Yep.
I'm doing another rewatch of Superstore at the moment, so it's nice to see America Ferreira again. I think he plays that role well. She's a struggling nurse, apparently. There you go.
Yep, exactly. Basically, all the people who are individual investors are struggling in some shape or form, really. They show the ones who are struggling. They're not showing the ones who are like, oh, okay, we're middle class people who don't mind having this little extra money in it. No, we're going to show you a struggling nurse. We're going to show you someone who's working at GameStop. We're showing you like two students who are, you know, with all the student debt. Yeah, definitely those people are the ones who are gaining from this the most.
Who should be rooting for? The guy who wants to buy a mansion to knock it down for a tennis court, or the nurse struggling to make ends meet? It's a tough one. speaking of, Nick Offerman plays an even Kenneth Griffin, I think the richest of the Wall Street guys. It's quite an amusing thing at the start where they're like, they're all having to be uber polite to whoever's next up the ladder to them.
Yeah, there's definitely a hierarchy there.
Yeah, yeah. And well, let's finish that off then. Seth Rogen is the other one. Gave Plotkin, he's another Wall Street guy. The one we probably see the most of. He's the one who's
I think probably the one the most who is
doing all the shorting and stuff. Yeah, and kind of is held responsible when things go wrong.
Yeah. Who plays his wife? Huh? I felt like I've seen her somewhere before. I can't place her.
It was Olivia Thirlby. I definitely recognised her as well. She most recently was in Oppenheimer.
Oh, I've not seen Oppenheimer, so that's what she did.
Right. She was in Juno, apparently. Presumably is the best friend character. Yeah, Juno's she best friend.
That was a long time ago. So familiar.
No Strings Attached, Dark Star. I've seen quite a few films of her in, but none of them are really standing out to me as, oh yes, it's from that. But yeah, you're right. She looks incredibly familiar.
Hmm.
But yeah, none of these are the one that I necessarily think is what's causing that. Did you watch Why the Last Man?
I have, actually.
Apparently she's in that.
Ah, okay.
As Hero Brown. It might just be that she looks like a number of other actresses.
Yeah, probably.
We also have Shailene Woodley playing Keith's wife. Always a class act, Shailene Woodley. I think she does a good job. We have Anthony Ramos. Good to see Anthony Ramos. Transformers fame. I think it's the first film I've seen him in since In the Heights, where he was phenomenal. He plays a GameStop employee whose boss is Dane DeHaan, who I've not seen for a while.
That was Dane DeHaan.
I know. So,
that's incredible. So the thing is, right, this film was set in COVID times as well. So half the time, most of them have their masks on as well. So, but that can't be Dane DeHaan. For some reason, I thought Dane DeHaan would be shorter than Anthony Ramos.
He does give off that energy, doesn't he?
He does,
I say most of them, it's like, oh, it's him. But Dane DeHaan, it must have been at least an hour, maybe an hour and a half into this movie. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. That's Dane DeHaan. Before he took his mask off. But I was very pleased myself for spotting that.
Well done.
Thanks, man. I would say, I know we're going through the characters now, but I'll take this chance to say the most pointless of the segments of this movie. I think I like these actors. I particularly like Anthony Ramos, but it didn't really, I don't know why it was in the movie, other than they thought, well, if they're talking about GameStop, we better show GameStop.
Yep, exactly. I mean, they wanted to make it like everyone against the big guys, right? So
yeah,
let's fill in the everyone group with,
and it's a kind of microcosm of employee versus boss.
Yeah, but I wonder how they choose the other three people. I mean, you have the Keith guy, obviously, who facilitated this whole thing, but there are loads of individual investors that they could choose from. So how did they pick these three exact individuals to tell the story? I wonder.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's even based on real character, that one. It feels like it might just be a kind of, we ought to have a GameStop employee. I have to say, so this storyline was, the boss was being unreasonable, I think the idea was, and this was his kind of rebellion. But I don't think the boss said anything unreasonable at all.
No.
He was just giving him good sales techniques.
Yep.
I was fully behind Dane DeHaan in this.
But we get to see Anthony Ramos dancing, though, so that's always good.
Well, that's always nice, yeah. Dancing to one of many obscene songs in this film.
Oh, yes, loads of them. Hip-hop songs.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't appreciate that, Zijian. I wanted the PG cut of this movie with less offensive songs in it. I think this marks me, maybe this makes me the Dane DeHaan character and I'm one of the bad guys, but
I don't mind it so much so that, but I only minded it when they overpower the conversation. I think the first song itself was really bad at that. It was just too loud. I couldn't hear what anyone was saying. I was like, oh, struggling. Maybe I'm just getting too old for this, but I was really, really struggling to understand what they're talking about.
Yeah, it just felt very kind of juvenile thing for a director to do of like, listen to all these bad words in my song. We get it. They're rebellious. We get it. Okay. Maybe show us through acting. I don't know. Oh, dear. So, yeah, that subplot I felt could have been lost.
I mean,
without too much worry.
But that's the thing, right, Colin? Like, you can't really show it through acting. What did they do? They just bought shares.
Well,
all of them just buy shares.
Yeah.
All of them just click the button on a phone app, Colin. It's nothing special, nothing like freedom, no William Wallace, no someone chanting, no someone jumping on tables. People are just clicking a button.
And in fact, most of the time, the big thing that they're doing is not clicking a different button.
Yeah, exactly. It's not made for cinematic glory here, right? When it comes to rebellion.
No, and it's films like The Big Short, it's a very good film, and that's all about stock market things. Even because like Wall Street is a great film, and that's just people buying and selling, although in a much more frenetic way than this. But yes, you're right. It's difficult to kind of make this dramatic. The remaining pair, the students, Michala Herold and Talia Ryder, who I've not come across before. Mm. They played students who were also investing, and then there's a few other people. We're talking about the masks, in fact, with this all being during COVID, because it's based on a true story. At one point, I did think, are they just doing good guys wear masks, bad guys don't wear masks? But I was pleased it was a bit more subtle than that.
They didn't do that at all. I found it difficult at the beginning to understand what they were saying, especially with the loud music blaring. So at the beginning, it was hard. I have to say, it was really hard to understand what they were saying, especially with the masks on. So,
well, as the younger podcast host, I had no problems at all, Zijan.
Oh, of course you did. Were you sitting right beside the speaker by chance?
I had my hearing aid in, so it was fine.
Ah, good, good, so, yeah. Good thing you thought about it. You didn't mention Sebastian Stan.
Oh, sorry, Sebastian. I skipped him out. Vlad Tenev. So he was an entrepreneur who owned the website that a lot of people use to buy and sell things, right?
Robin Hood,
yes. Yeah.
Great name, though.
Yeah. He, of course, was, I can't remember the character's name, but he played Tonya Harding's husband in I, Tonya, and did it very well. So reteaming with Craig Gillespie. So it's a great cast. It's a great director. It's based on a great book by a great writer.
What can go wrong?
So why was it not very good? I'm revealing what I think about this before you revealed what you think. But I was disappointed with this.
Were you going into it hoping there was like The Big Short?
Well, I mean, to be honest, The Big Short, partly that. I enjoyed The Big Short. I wasn't kind of as crazy about it as some people. But I was going into it thinking, I, Tonya was phenomenal. Carlo was a lot of fun. He's going to, like The Big Short, he's going to take a fairly dull subject for a lot of people and make it really cool and fun and do clever stuff. And this just was, it wasn't drab, I'll give it that, but it was quite by the book. Like, it wasn't very imaginative, I felt. Big Short, famously, Margot Robbie in the bath explaining things, Selena Gomez explaining things. I kind of just playing fast and loose with this stuff. Whereas this, there wasn't really anything outside of a standard biopic, really. Just bumped around these characters. You saw what happened the good guys, the underdogs, they hold their nerve. And I say, normally we do spoilers, non-spoilers, but I don't think they really...
Everyone knows what the story is.
Yeah, there's no real point doing that here, is there?
Yeah, it's a biopic.
What I did appreciate is that it wasn't... I when it started, as I say, talking about the master, but just in general, I thought, is it going to be Wall Street guys are all really evil and the underdogs are all really heroic? And to be honest, a lot of the time it was that. But one person I thought kind of reversed that a little bit was Seth Rogen. So I think Seth Rogen's character was more sympathetic than I was expecting. Like, particularly scenes with his wife when he's talking about this. It's not kind of a, ha ha ha, look at this guy, he's losing everything. It was kind of like, okay, he's a human being. Stuff's happened to him as well, which I did appreciate. What are your thoughts on this overall?
Like, I don't hate this film, I would say. I found it okay. I found it very flat.
Yeah.
Like, it's just going through the motions. And you know what I mean? It's just telling the story. Like, there's nothing stands out as like a climax, or nothing stands out as like a fist pumping moment. Everything just went out as very flat, and it just fizzled out in the end, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no tonal shifts. Like, I don't feel the urgency or anything. There's no like quickening of pace, or like everything was just at the same pace. It moves at the same movement. It's just going slowly, plodding through. There's nothing that introduces any urgency, and it's probably true to real life, to be fair, because you know, you don't need like someone, you know, threatening to kill someone, etc., etc. But it just it just felt so flat without that either.
Like, there are things where so one of the big dramatic moments to go for is the kind of the trading app gets closed down, and not closed down, just refuses to let you buy anything. The Reddit forum does get temporarily closed down, and it's this kind of, it's in the trailer, Wall Street cheated, kind of the Goliaths cracking down on the Davids and making life harder for them, and that's played big. And then obviously Keith Gill gets called to some sort of court hearing.
Yeah,
although even then he's not really, like, there's no risk of him being in trouble. Like, he's not
exactly.
Yeah, it's not kind of like, well, are they going to take away his life yet? It's just a call.
What
information can he give them? Yeah. And you compare that with something like The Social Network, phenomenal film. And then that really gets the pressure of the court cases and things, does it brilliantly. And yeah, this is like, well, okay. Even the scenes where it's like, so Keith Gill and Shailene Woodley, they're not on the poverty line, but they're fairly poor, I think. And then they've got like, first of all, he gets a few hundred thousand, then a million, then 11 million, then 30 million. And that's life-changing stuff. And he's refusing to sell, he's sticking to his guns.
Yeah,
it just didn't feel that dramatic. Like, if you're, you can't pay off your mortgage, or you can't pay your mortgage rather, and then you get 11 million pounds.
Surely you do that, right?
So this actually was one of my big annoyances of this film, is that at no point did anyone seem to recognize that you could sell some of your shares.
Yeah,
it's like, now, these students who, they suddenly are like, well, I can barely afford food, but I've got 500,000 if I sell this, whatever it is. It's like, well, sell half of it or sell a tenth of it. It's like, if I made $11 million, but I also wanted to keep back in the shares, I'd sell $1 million worth and then keep the 10. But no one ever even considers that as an option.
I think it makes sense that FCA gave a warning before this movie because of things like this.
Oh yes, they did. Yes, don't take advice from this film.
Yes.
And I don't know whether he's just treating other idiots, but it's such a false jeopardy, because it makes it so binary when that's not the case. And I don't think you need to have studied actuarial science for how many years to work that out, do you?
Exactly.
I think most audience members would have figured that out quite quickly. So it's like America Ferrera, her character is like, she is in huge debt and refusing to sell these shares. But again, you can pay off your debt and still have a lot of shares. There is no jeopardy.
And when you find out from her character in the end that she ended up with a negative net worth as well and still holding on to those shares, you start to think like, was that really a good choice, America Ferrera? Was that really a good choice?
Which I wish they'd made more of, actually, because they kind of finished on... As you said, they start the film with various people's net worth, and you see these people who are in poverty or in debt, and then you see these Wall Street guys with their billions. And it's a fairly, I get what they're doing there. And then it ends similarly by saying, Keith Gill is now worth how many millions. But I would have liked a bit more focus, I guess, on America Ferrera's situation. So my biggest problem is that, my other big problem with it is there is no smoking gun. At the end of so in a film like this, you generally expect to see, you know, when the film comes to a close and they bring up the pictures of the real life people and what happened to them, you expect to see so and so spent 11 years in prison. Or someone. Instead, it's like, there was an investigation. Turns out no one did anything wrong.
Exactly.
And it's like, you can insinuate all you like that there's a cover-up. And I guess the lawyers have been through this with a fine-tooth comb, but what? No one did anything wrong and all you got is kind of insinuation?
Yeah, I didn't like that at all. What's the point of this film, right? At the end of the day, like, what's the point of making us go through all this, trying to get us to root against the HR managers, and then nothing just comes out from it?
Because they even say, like, so-and-so said that, the Sebastian Stan character claims that he was never told to shut down the app, but we discovered that he was texting with this hedge fund manager the day before. It's like, yeah, and? Did the text message say, please close down this app? Because if it didn't, then we're fine. But yeah, I think the rights to this film were bought in January 2021, which is really early on in the whole GameStop thing. And I guess maybe they just thought there'd be a more interesting ending to the story. Because it just faded away, didn't it?
Exactly. That's why I say it's just fizzled out. It was just a flat, flat story with a great cast, but nothing happens.
Yeah. And you think, given how great this cast is, like with a better script, with a better story, another great, great director. I'm just looking at the writers. I don't know if they were involved in the previous Craig Gillespie films or not. But apparently the Winklevoss twins were executive producing.
Really?
Don't understand why.
Well,
that
they've come along. I've heard the name for a long time.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like, in general, critics liked it more than we did. They describe it as, Rotten Tomatoes describes it as rousingly entertaining, which I don't think is true.
Rousingly. They use the word rousingly.
The audiences do not agree. A budget of $30 million, it's made less than $10 million at the box office, and as discussed, it's disappearing from cinemas. You get towards the end, you're like, is that it? Is that all that's happening? It's like, I remember when it was clearly wrapping up, I was like, oh, right, okay. We're done, are we?
Yeah. Oh, well. I haven't been to a cinema for a long time. I think the previous film I saw before this was Barbie. So I think it got me back to the cinema, I guess. So
it's nice to get out of the house, isn't it? It's nice to get out of the house.
It really is.
Okay. Well, yeah, sadly, disappointing, this one.
Oh. Yeah.
We move on then, shall we? What time are we on?
Lots of time.
Might be a short one today. We move on to Actor Factor, the segment where we talk about the films of a particular actor. And this time it is Susan Sarandon. Yes. Your choice, Susan. I believe you're on record of saying that you love Susan Sarandon.
I like Susan Sarandon. I think she's
great. Oh, it's like now, is it?
I don't think I've ever used the word love for her. Mm. Maybe I have. Well, I think she's great anyway.
I don't remember. I seem to remember you being... but a fan when we did the Blue Beetle review.
Yes, I know. I was thinking, Susan Sarandon, she got all the parts. Well, I mean, Meryl Streep has gotten a lot of the parts that Susan Sarandon may have gotten. I think she's a great actress in her own right. So I liked her in Stepmom. So have you seen Stepmom before?
I have seen Stepmom, yeah.
Yeah, I love her in Stepmom. With Julia Roberts and Ed Harris. And I think she was really good in that. And I love her in Enchanted. And I love Cloud Atlas, which is one of my favorite films of all time.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a very good film. I don't think the book translated very well on screen. That's probably why it didn't turn out very well. But I liked it a lot. I remember watching this with my brother when he was still in Bristol. So that was some good memories. But I haven't watched many films of Susan Sarandon, per usual. I always suggest the name, and then I realized, oh no, I haven't seen many films of her. I've only seen six, so... Okay. The three, apart from those and Blue Beetle, are The Witches of Eastwick.
Was that the 90s?
Yeah, 1987.
Okay.
With Jack Nicholson as the devil, who flirts with Michelle Pfeiffer, Susan Sarandon, and Cher.
All right.
And has babies with all three of them.
Was there a sequel to this?
I think there was a TV series of that.
Right.
But yeah, Cher, Susan Sarandon, and Michelle Pfeiffer, I think they were one of the bigger names in those times as well. And I think they chose those three in particular because one was a brunette, one was a redhead, and one was a blonde.
It saves money on buying wigs if you can
exactly.
Just cast them like that.
Yeah. That was a good fun film as well. And then the last film I saw was The Lovely Bones.
Oh, right.
where she played the grandmother, I believe, of Saoirse Ronan's character, who was, if you've not seen The Lovely Bones, she was sexually abused and killed.
Yeah, I've not seen it, but I know the... Was it Peter Jackson, or was that something else?
As in directed the film?
Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember.
I might think of something else. I've not seen it, and I wasn't tempted by that very scene. Did I watch it?
Stanley Tucci is in it.
Okay.
He plays the guy. Have you read the book before?
No. It was directed by Peter Jackson. There you go.
Oh, okay. The book is really popular. The book is really popular, but I didn't care for it that much, I would say. So I felt the same way about the film. It's okay. It's okay. It's pretty good.
It doesn't seem the most cheery of...
Oh, it's definitely not cheery, man.
But Saoirse Ronan's excellent.
Yes.
Okay. I've kind of the opposite, where I thought that I hadn't seen many Susan Sarandon films. It turns out I've seen 14.
Yep. I knew you have.
Yeah, which surprised me. Because a lot of these I don't really remember her being in. She played maybe minor supporting roles. The obvious one is Thelma and Louise, which was a huge film, really good. Ridley Scott, quite different to a lot of Ridley Scott films, but I really like this one. A young Brad Pitt alongside Susan Sarandon and Gina Davis as the two lead roles. And that's definitely worth a watch. She was in called The Player, which I talked about a few times, which is quite interesting. Anywhere But Here is not a very good film. It's kind of a very mediocre film. But it's directed by John Stockwell, who also did Crazy Beautiful, which is one of my favourite films. So I kind of sorted out to see if it would be as good as that. And it's not. It's fine. I think it might even star Susan Sarandon's daughter as well. I could be wrong. Igby Goes Down stars Claire Danes and Kieran Culkin, which is quite fun. Kieran Culkin enjoying a lot of fame at the moment after his appearance in Succession.
Yep.
Elizabeth Town is not good, but I've seen it many times. I've got my two titles mixed up. The one I just described by John Stockwell is called Middle of Nowhere. Anywhere But Here, similar title, is actually really good. It's Susan Sarandon is the kind of irresponsible mother of a young Natalie Portman, and that's on Disney Plus, or at least it was when I watched it. And I think is worth seeking out because she's kind of letting down her daughter, but she has all these hopes and dreams, but isn't very good at being a mother. She's in Wall Street 2. Don't remember that. She was in Maybe I Do, which I saw on the plane on the way to Canada, which is based on a play, and it's directed and adapted by the playwright. And let me tell you, it feels very much like a play that's been adapted and directed by the playwright. She was in the most actuarial film, title at least, of Arbitrage, alongside Richard Gere, which is fine. There's a lot of kind of these films are okay in this list. So if we're going for our favourite, you've already said that Cloud Atlas is one of your favourite films, is it that?
Yes, yeah, I like it a lot.
For me, it's probably Thelma and Louise, actually, from this list.
That's a very good film, though, that I've heard a lot of good things about. Yeah, so it's I need to watch good. It.
And the worst?
Blue Beetle.
I forgot to mention Ride the Eagle, which is fun. I think she only appears on video, actually, because I think she's died before it starts, which is Jake Johnson's late mother. The worst of these... I don't know. I mean, I said there's none... I don't have any terrible ones here. They're just a lot of mediocre ones. I'll go for Arbitrage because I don't really remember it at all. So that's not a good sign. Next time is Look Back in Oscar, where we look back at a Best Picture Oscar-winning film. What fury delight are we seeing, Zijun?
Pure delight. Pure joy. We're looking at the sheer exuberance and brilliance of Schindler's List.
Schindler's List. A film I have seen, but not for a while. There you go. Brilliance is true. The rest of it probably not true, but we'll find out next time. We finish, as we always do, on the quiz. You've won the last couple, I think, Zijan, so you're closing the gap.
Yes.
And I'll be honest, as I often say, I didn't spend much time revising this one. So we'll see how it goes. It's Paul Thomas Anderson. Zijan, kick us off.
Okay. Question one. To what film of Paul Thomas Anderson do you quote that? Everybody is the same. Maybe if there's a change, it's like 1 degree. Normally, you see a 90-degree change in a movie. To me, they're all pretty much the exact same people as they were at the beginning of the movie.
That's interesting. I'm going to say Magnolia.
No, it's Boogie Nights.
All right. Question one for you. Paul Thomas Anderson has only won one BAFTA. It was the best original screenplay for which movie?
So I know Boogie Nights is very, very popular, but I don't know whether it's popular in the States only or not. But I'll go with that.
No, it's Licorice Pizza.
Oh, really? Huh, interesting. Great film, though. I love that film. Question two. What was the film Heartache originally called, sharing the same name as the character played by Philip Baker Hall?
Sydney.
That's correct.
I actually put that as a question and then changed it to something else. So, which of his films features Reese Witherspoon?
Reese Witherspoon was in one of his films?
Apparently.
It's probably a young Reese Witherspoon. Let's go with The Master.
No, she was in Inherent Vice.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow. Question three. What's the name of the quiz show hosted by Jimmy and Magnolia?
Ooh, I did look this up. I think it's called What Do Kids Know?
Yeah, that's correct. I assume you would know this quite well because there's Tom Cruise in it.
I have seen this film, but just the ones. One of Tom Cruise's most out there performances. Question three. Who wrote the book that There Will Be Blood is based on?
I should have done a lot more research on this. I won't be able to guess this. Go on.
No, fair enough. Upton Sinclair.
Yeah, I wouldn't guess that at all. Question four. Prior to his death, which was the only film directed by Paul Thomas Anderson not to feature Philip Seymour Hoffman?
Ooh, okay. Well, he was definitely in The Master. He must have been in Magnolia. There's so many people in that. I can't remember when he died. I'm going to say There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, that's correct. Wow. Well, you've won this already.
I have. My questions get harder, so...
Wow, great.
We'll see how this goes. Question four. What is the name of the religious cult in The Master?
Oh, I saw this. Is it something like The Cause?
It is precisely The Cause. Yes, good work.
Yeah. My last question for you is, Paul Thomas Anderson has been nominated for an Oscar in 6 of his films. For which of the 6 was he not nominated for a screenplay Oscar? So basically,
He
got a screenplay Oscar for 5 of his films. One of them, he's got nominated for other things, but not writing.
Okay. Well, I know that he got nominated for Licorice Pizza because he won it. He must have been for There Will Be Blood. The fact that you thought he might have won it for Boogie Nights suggests that he must have been nominated for Boogie Nights. Phantom Thread.
Yeah, that's correct.
What wow, heck? Okay.
Yeah, he was nominated for Best Picture and Best Director for that, but not screenplay.
I really need the lucky guesses to come off when I haven't already won. It doesn't really matter now. finally, for you, we mentioned him earlier, Paul Dano plays identical twins in There Will Be Blood, one of whom is a preacher. What is their slightly appropriate surname?
Oh, no. You see, right, I knew Paul Dano played twins in Devil Will Be Blood, so I thought one of the questions regarding Paul Dano would be one of those things. He played a preacher, so what is his very appropriate surname? Let's go with Sermon.
Good guess. Sunday.
Ah, okay.
Well, it's a 4-1 victory, Zijan. It's fairly conclusive, this one.
I think so.
Which we've not got too many left this year, but that puts me a little slightly further ahead.
There's still a chance for me.
Oh, we still got loads left. We've got loads of time. I'll look at my spreadsheet so I can confirm. I'm 9-6 up, and we've got 5 to go. So,
yeah, still time.
Still time. Yeah, I guess. Next time, we are quizzing on the Rambo films.
Okay.
And what's our main topic for next time, Dijan?
The newest Scorsese film, which should remember, there's something to do with flowers.
It is something to do with flowers. Killers of the Flower Moon, the first Scorsese film to feature both Leonardo DiCaprio and Robert De Niro.
Oh, we're going to have to watch so many long films this next 2 weeks.
It's going to be a long film. Wow. But we will see you then.
Bye.